Good evening. We'll ask everyone at the dais to find their seats and welcome to our City Council meeting of November 28th. We'll call our meeting to order and begin with a Pledge of Allegiance by Councilmember Sturtevant. And thank you. Let's go with a roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi?
Here.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Next item is the approval of the agenda, and that will include the waiving of the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on the agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the city council votes, and she will remind us if we need to do such things. Is there a motion on the agenda?
Move approval agenda.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturtevant, seconded by Councilmember Borbo. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. No presentations. We do have our consent calendar items. Before we go to that, there are a couple that might need a little explanation. It's not supernatural securities, it's supranational securities. What is this item A3? I believe our city treasurer is going to tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, Mayor O'Malley. Supranationals were added recently to the state government code, which provides the only allowable investments that a city can invest in. So this adds a new class of investments for us, and we think it's a good option to put a small amount of our money into. Supranationals are, the government code allows, there's actually three international banks only, and they're very stable. They have never had a default ever. One of them is, you know, as the World Bank. You've probably heard of that. They have, as I said, they're rated actually better in many cases than federal agencies like Fannie Mae and Federal Home Loan Bank, which have been a little dicey, but there's not been any defaults, but there's been some worries. So this gives us a little more diversification, opportunity for diversification, and also a little bit better yield, so we feel like we can make a little bit more money without any new taxes or anything for the city. So that's why we're recommending this. We discussed it with the City Finance Committee a few months ago, and they were recommending it. So they are an international banking, three international banks that have been around for 50 years, and they have never had a default. So we will be buying in small amounts, and so we think that's a good option for a little more diversification.
Thank you. And such investment decisions are made primarily through the finance department and with oversight, and I assume it requires approval by the city treasurer, and these are items that are reviewed by our city finance committee that is made up of two council members, our city treasurer, and other staff. Am I correct in that assumption? Is that a...
Yeah, and Ms. Rangel, I think, could comment on it, that I make recommendations for investments, and she reviews them to make sure they're legal and that they have adequate cash on hand.
I think you both have covered that very well, but that is stated accurately.
Thank you. With that, I will pull consent calendar item A4 for some a little more detail on that. I will make some introductions. Other than that, these are considered to be routine items and would be passed upon one motion unless a member of the council or the public wishes to pull an item for further discussion. Any council wishing to pull an item? Any member of the public? I would entertain a motion on consent calendar items A1, 2, 3, and 5, and 6.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Mayor, by, you know, you could have the job if you wanted it. Councilmember Sturdivant, roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. I pulled item A4 just because our appointee that's being recommended to us tonight is in the audience. The appointment of the Atascadero Tourism Business Improvement District is made up, of course, the board is made up of 5 members. They have to be members of the lodging industry, and they are voted on, first nominated by all members of the lodging industry, and then they are then presented, their selection is presented to our council, and then they become a 5-member advisory board that takes action on the 2% of the transient occupancy tax collected that is oriented towards marketing and promotion of the tourism industry in our community, like every other city has. So tonight, I would like to ask Mr. Daniel Brewer to come forward to the mic, maybe tell us a little bit about himself. He is the recommendation of the tourism board to us for consideration. Welcome. I think, let's see if that mic is on there. Chief, could you check?
Thank you, Tom. I want to thank you guys for appointing me to be on the Atascadero board. I really look forward to being a part of that. I've been the general manager here at the Best Western Plus Colony Inn for just under 2 years. Prior to that, I was at the La Quinta Inn & Suites in Paso Robles for about 10 years. And then before I started in hospitality, I started my career basically here at Atascadero. I was a manager at the former movie theater here at Central Coast Cinemas, as well as worked at Mid-State Bank and Trust. So I know the community very well. I recognize a lot of people's faces, and I'm really happy to be back here. And I look forward to being a part of this wonderful community.
Well, thank you. And thank you for your willingness to serve. You were unanimously recommended by the Tourism Board. And we can also then go ahead and include that if there's no other discussion by council. And any public comment on that consent calendar item? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and make the motion to approve item A4.
I'll second.
And that was Councilmember Burbo. A motion by Mayor O'Malley, seconded by Councilmember Burbo. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Next item, updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. The first item I want to talk to you about tonight is the warming center at St. William's Parish. So St. William's is now hosting the Atascadero Warming Center to house individuals who are homeless during times of inclement weather days when nighttime temperatures are forecast to be 35 degrees or below, or there is a 50% or greater chance of precipitation. The center is a community partnership including ECHO, The Link, Atascadero Police Department, and Global Sharing, who are all working together with St. William's Parish to provide this service to the community. Anyone who needs more information should contact the center at atascaderowc@gmail.com or call 805-539-3778. And this will be the second year that we've had this warming center in addition to the beds provided by ECHO. I want to talk about Centennial Bridge and Plaza ribbon cutting. The sign went up this week, and along with a lot of the work on the plaza, and it's been exciting to watch. The ribbon cutting ceremony for the Centennial Bridge and Plaza project will be held this Friday, December 1st, at 9 a.m. The ribbon cutting will be the official grand opening of the Centennial Bridge, which connects the downtown from Historic City Hall and Sunken Gardens to the Galaxy Theater and Colony Square. The project provides improved downtown parking facilities, an increased number of parking spaces, a creekside pedestrian trail from El Camino Real to Lewis Avenue, creek restoration, improved public access with interpretive signs, improved access and visibility to the Historical Society Colony House, and the project has utilized the efforts of many local companies, including North Coast Engineering, Aris Studio Architects, Althausen Mead Environmental, Earth Systems Pacific, Smith Structural Group, Toma Electric, Firma Landscape Architects, Rick Engineering Company, Joanne Head Survey Services, Terra Verde, and Cal Portland Constructions have all worked together to complete the project on time and within budget, along with a host of city staff from both Public Works, Community Development, and other departments. And speaking of working together, so Light Up the Downtown and the Arts and Wine Tour will be held this coming Friday, December 1st, beginning at 5 p.m. in the Sunken Gardens with the Chamber of Commerce Art and Wine event. The art and wine portion of the evening costs $15 per ticket, which includes a wine glass and numerous wine tastings among participating downtown merchants. Then at dusk, we'll have the special holiday lighting of Historic City Hall. This year, we're not going to light up the trees in the Sunken Gardens, the historic deodoras. As you know, we lost one of our deodoras this year, and we had to cut it down. In addition to that, it became more and more problematic to light up these aging trees and the stress on the trees, not to mention the time and effort that we put into that. So we have decided that we are going to light up the light up City Hall. It's an amazing look already. There's some sneak previews as you walk by. And you can see it, and we'll light that up on Friday night. This year's, we have installed a 10-foot mountain pine wreath with LED mini lights and a lot of garland. There's a 5-foot silver bow. And two 12-foot monarch frame trees with mini lights will be placed in the Sunken Garden. So there'll be a lot to light up on Friday night. This was a combination. Lifting up that wreath was quite a project, and it was a coordination between the Public Works Department and the Fire Department. I think everybody enjoyed trying this. It was a challenging project, and lifting it was a lot of fun to sit and watch. We attracted quite a crowd just watching the wreath go up. So after the official lighting countdown this year, our younger guests will be able to have a visit with Santa, and everyone can enjoy hot chocolate, a complimentary tour of Historic City Hall, and a hayride around City Hall. Everyone is invited to bring their family and friends to enjoy a beautiful and fun evening to help bring in the season. And we encourage visitors to Atascadero to see our beautiful holiday showcase throughout the month of December. And to really get you in the spirit, on December 2nd, so that's the next night, Saturday, December 2nd, from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m., we will have holiday musical walk around the lake. It's at Atascadero Lake and the park, along with the zoo. Enjoy a special evening with delightful walk around the lake with musical groups, carolers, Santa, community singing, holiday decorations, and more. That's an enjoyable evening. The zoo is open that evening. There are events at the pavilion. It's a great night. Winter Wonderland will be on Friday, December 8th from 5 to 9 p.m. in the Sunken Gardens and the downtown area. This will be a winter paradise with massive snow slides, snow play areas, a rock climbing wall, bounce houses, Joe's Little Train, plus Santa and Mrs. Claus. And everyone can have lots of fun and get some shopping done all in one evening. And December 16th from 10 to 1 p.m. is Holiday Magic at the Charles Paddock Zoo. Experience the magic of the holiday season as our zookeepers step in as Santa's elves to prepare and deliver gifts for the animals. And Santa will also be there. So Santa's got a busy few weeks ahead, too, in addition to getting ready for Christmas. And so with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions for the city manager. Excellent job. And there is quite a bit of Christmas spirit going on in Atascadero. Thank you for that update.
Absolutely.
We have a fairly short council meeting tonight. All the staff, you know, take bets on when we're going to actually end. So we decide who our favorite is and just kind of, you know, drag it out or shorten it up depending on that.
I need to clarify that there's no money involved in those bets. It's just a guess.
Okay. Then how come you try so hard to win every time?
It's just my nature.
Okay. So with that, we have our community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on any topic not on the agenda that's under our jurisdiction. So we invite you to come forward, share your thoughts, and we are waiting to hear from you. Seeing no one run towards the lectern, we'll close community forum, bring it back to council, and move on with the business at hand this evening. Before we begin our public hearings, because we will have a couple of items that will be under the Community Development Department, I won't put you too much on the spot, Mr. Dunsmore, but you have one of our staff person with you tonight that's been around before, hasn't been to council meetings too much. Would you just introduce her and tell us a little bit about her? She'll be joining us more in the future.
Absolutely. I would be happy to introduce Katie Bannister. She's our assistant planner in community development, and she's soon to be our one and only full-time staff planner in community development for an interim time, as Alfredo Castillo, our current associate planner, is moving on to Grover Beach. So Katie's been with us for, has it been almost 2 years now? About 2 years now, and doing a great job. She's basically our counter person, spends a lot of time answering questions with the public at the front counter and on the phone. She is the go-to planner. So a lot of people have met Katie through community development.
Yes, and I do want to publicly compliment Katie. I've seen her in action, not only at the counter, but in community meetings. And you do have a very nice way with the public. I think people appreciate that. It's not always a time when folks are happy with the city, when they have to go through, as I say, we have to tell folks a lot of times, sorry you live in California, because we have to interpret a lot of state laws and rules, and our job is to help folks get through a lot of that process, and you do a very good job. So look forward to having you here more often, helping fill out. Welcome. And with that, I'm going to move on to management reports, item C1, housing and community development parks related grant and associated parks. Oh, well, I was just so excited to get to my favorite one. I skipped the next one, which is actually B1, Title IX Planning and Zoning Text Amendments, Planning 2017-1650. We'll begin with ex parte communications, which was where all of the council members share with you anything we've heard outside of this public process that may have influenced our thinking or our decisions on this project. Because you have a right to know how we come to a conclusion. Most of what we hear is going to be through staff reports, but if we do have any conversations outside of this meeting, we are required to report those. So if there are any, I'll just go from my left to my right.
No, other than talking with the city manager.
Yes.
No ex parte.
No ex parte.
No ex parte.
No ex parte.
This will be relatively straightforward. I'll turn it over to our community development director, Mr. Phil Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'd like to introduce this item as sort of an annual update of the zoning regulations. It was about a year ago today, just over a year ago today, that we did the first major overhaul of our zoning regulations in a long period of time. And that overhaul resulted in a whole new set of land use definitions and a lot of changes in terms of how the organization of that zoning is and creation of this handbook. Well, now it's been a year. We've put this to use. And in fact, Katie has been sort of the prime front and center of putting this document to use along with our other planning staff and myself. And now that we've done that, it takes that amount of time to really see, hey, what's working? Is there some organizational issues with the document? And we have found some of those issues. We've kind of been creating a list of those items over the past year of things that need to get fixed. For the most part, these fixes are really typographical, organizational, and corrections to make this document work good. But at the same time, there's a few tweaks in there to correct the zoning for what was intended with that first big review. Now, what we're not going to be looking at tonight is really significant issues, or more significant issues, that we might be looking at a later date, such as appropriate land uses in each category. We'd like to visit that again as well. But really, what I see this as is a what we'd like to keep doing is an annual review and keep this a living document, keep this moving with the times, keep this up to date with current trends and where our city is going. So really, what it's broken down into, just to make it real simple, is three types of amendments. One's a cleanup of inconsistencies where it might say one thing in one section of the code and another thing in another section to make it clear. Another part of it is a cleanup of some of the land use definitions and the associated zoning districts. And then there's a few tweaks in the development standards for clarification. And these are things that the planning staff have found over the last year, things that just aren't quite working. So I'm going to go through a few of those, and I'm going to let Katie chime in on some of these as well. But for the most part, what I want to do is really streamline this presentation and leave it sort of up to your questions to focus on specific topic areas. I have a whole ton of slides that I'm not going to show you up here tonight that I have hidden, but I'm prepared to show you any section of the code that we're amending tonight, but I'm not going to go through the whole thing comprehensively up front is what I'm essentially going to do. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Katie and just go through the first set. We're just going to go through these really quickly. And as I said, once we get to the end, we'll come back. And if we need to get down into a deeper layer of this, we can look at that as well.
Thank you. Yes, as Phil mentioned, the first category really are just basic grammatical errors and really simple changes, that refinements that don't change the standards or the intent of the zoning ordinance. So a lot of the corrections are to amend cross-reference issues where one section of the code will make reference to another section of the code that at some point in time was amended, but was those cross-references were not kept up to date. So many cross-reference amendments. In addition, at some point in time, what we now call an administrative use permit was called an adjustment, and throughout the code, the word adjustment continues to be used, which is confusing when the public uses the municipal code. It's often misunderstood. They think that they can just sort of request an adjustment, and that's something staff can quickly approve, whereas they really have to go through an administrative use permit process. So some clarification there. There happens to be some references to the Soil Conservation Services, actually an agency I happened to work for back in 1998, and the name of that agency had already been changed in 1998. Our municipal code has not been amended, so the Natural Resources Conservation Service will now be shown in our code instead of a defunct agency or a renamed agency. There's a math error in the animal equivalency units calculation, and this amendment will correct that. There is also just some imprecise language that gets misinterpreted frequently, and so those are changes in this classification. One of the changes that looks like a very significant change but really isn't is within the sign ordinance, there are two different tables that tell the types of signs that are allowed, and then it gives some design guidelines for those signs. There are a number of inconsistencies where one table will say that this type of sign is allowed in these three zoning districts, and then in the other table, they're just inconsistent. So again, no intent to change the intent of the code, just to make it so that the code agrees with itself. So we're really not going to go through any of those changes. I've had prepared slides if you have any questions about any of those, but at this point, just going to move on to the second type of amendment. And Phil, I don't know if you want to tackle this one. This is the land use definitions, the cleanups of those.
Let's, before we go on, let me check with council. Any questions on anything so far? Very good. Good job. Continue.
Thank you. A couple more of these are really just defining some of the things that we've recently changed. Cannabis was a topic we visited just last month. We needed to update the table to really recognize personal cannabis cultivation. What also you see in red here is the notation of where this is in the staff report, so you can refer to that as I'm talking through some of these topic areas. Definition clarification for parks and playgrounds, livestock specialties, and then differentiating amusement services and indoor recreation services. That's one that is a little more in-depth because it does sort of clarify these two things that hadn't really been properly clarified with the first big amendment. We had intended to, but what this does, it speaks to the card rooms and things like that. And there's a couple different things that when we started looking at the details after that first big amendment, we realized that that wasn't the true intent of where we all had meant to go. And so that's sort of that definition. We can look at that a little more closely if we need to. Also, some refinement in the discussion of what a temporary event is. We've had a number of issues where we've had events come in and they've had a really long setup time that may go on for weeks and weeks and weeks and a long teardown time. Really clarifying what that temporary event is. A temporary event is really an event that takes maybe a day or two to set up, a day or two to tear down. Defining that was a really key issue. So that's more of a fix than a typographical error. Another one is to really respond to the trend, obviously, of the microbreweries, or the tasting rooms, the wineries, these smaller things that are happening. We inadvertently left those out of our industrial zoning districts. That was intended to be there. This fix adds them back in. If we were to get a demand for that, to create something like what you have at Tin City and Templeton, that could occur here as well. No reason to not allow those sorts of things in those districts. An important one here is a definition of retail sales restricted. This one came about earlier this year when a smoke shop was inquiring about moving into the downtown area. And they thought that their use was a regular general retail use because our zoning didn't clarify that it wasn't a retail use. But they were selling cigarettes, selling smoke accessories. In their mind, that was a retail use. Where in the reality, another part of our code defined a smoke shop as personal services restricted. A lot of folks don't see a smoke shop as personal service. They see it as retail use. So we created this new category called retail sales restricted, which really responds to defining what a smoke shop is. So someone looks for that in the retail section, they'll see a cross-reference to that. And if someone looks for it in the personal services section like it used to be, they'll see a cross-reference to this. And we've created this new section, retail sales restricted, to really respond to that. Again, not changing where smoke shops are allowed, but making it easier for the public and our staff to make a determination when one of those comes in. In that particular case, someone had already leased a building. Then they came in for a business license and sadly realized they could not go into the location they had wanted to. And that we don't want that to get to that point. And so we're trying to always catch those ahead of time. The last one there, card rooms and billiard halls. Can you remind me of that, how that clarification came about?
Yeah, so formerly card rooms and billiard halls were included under amusement services. This would move them into personal services restricted, which would then allow them in the commercial service, commercial tourist, and commercial park zoning districts. It just so happens that the one card room we have in town is in the commercial tourist zone where amusement services are not permitted. This actually allows the one card room we have in town to be a permitted use. And so it's just moving the card rooms and billiard halls from amusement services into personal services restricted.
Continuing on, a couple more of these. We can get into further detail if you'd like on them. One of them was fixing something that was created from our last rezoning effort, and it was the intent to have animal hospitals as a conditionally allowed use in the commercial professional zoning district. That's a district that essentially lines Morrow Road. An animal hospital under that particular definition is not going to be something that houses animals overnight. That's simply a daytime veterinary care clinic. The other one looks at adding a daycare center as an allowed use in a CN zoning district. We've had a number of those requests over the years. Commercial neighborhood is what CN zoning stands for. It's exactly what you want in a neighborhood, sort of smaller zoning district, is a daycare type center, if that can fit into that location. The last one there, laundromat, coin-operated laundry, that part of the code had not been clarified to decipher what those really are, what the definition of those should be. They have been an allowed use in our downtown. We had, in the initial La Plaza project, a request for a large one at that location, and there has been other requests in the downtown. Upon closer look at the general plan and upon closer look at our previous additions of our zoning ordinance, that wasn't the intent to have those in the downtown. So we're actually proposing that to be a little bit of a tweak to the land use definition, and then we have to go back to the land use table and define where those things should be allowed. And our recommendation tonight is have that as a conditionally allowed use in the downtown. That could also be shifted to be not allowed in the downtown altogether if we so desire to go there. A few more of these clarifications under land use definitions. A couple of them, such as business support services and contract construction services, needed some clarification in terms of how those things are termed in each of their locations. Healthcare services was not really clarified. We added some clarification to that. And then lastly, the parking lot, vehicle, and equipment storage. In the definition of a parking lot, there was some reference to storing vehicles and equipment long-term. The reality is a parking lot, such as the parking lot that's under construction right now across the street from City Hall, is purely a parking lot. That's not a vehicle storage area. Really clarifying those is key so that you don't have someone storing vehicles in something that's allowed just to be supposed to be just a public parking lot. I think we've had some storage issues like that in the past. A storage lot is such as something where it's a long-term storage, for example, RVs or boats, something that generally requires some design review and a use permit. Wanted to make sure those are really clear. On to that third category, there was some missing information and some holes in our development standards. Really wanted to clarify the multifamily density in our multifamily zones. Our general plan had been updated in 2002, but for the longest time, we've had two multifamily districts, and which, remind me the designations of those districts, Katie?
The moderate density is termed the RMF 10 zoning district. The high density multifamily zone is RMF 20 currently.
And today?
So, but in actuality, the RMF 20 zoning district does allow a maximum of 24 units to the acre. So it's a bit of a misnomer, and it's confusing for the public looking at our zoning ordinance. It says 20, but really they're allowed 24 units.
So we often had to explain that difference. Yeah, I know it says 20, but you're really allowed 24. Why not just put that in the code? So that's really what that clarification is on that particular location. There's also some clarification on the height, clarification on parking for offices, which was a little bit different of a calculation than the rest of our parking calculations. And then adding some flexibility and some specificity to flag lots and where a structure can be built on a flag lot in terms of its setback from the street and its setback from the property lines. Our code had called for a house that's built on a flag lot. This is something that on a long driveway in a deep lot subdivision to have a front yard setback, where really the idea is to just keep that setback away from the street and away from the accessway. Our revision there really provides more flexibility as to where that house could be built on a flag lot. They can choose their yard location, sort of lessens that setback requirement and allows for flexibility without having to ask for an exception. So that's a really good amendment. That's really about it. There's a lot more that's in the staff report in terms of details. I wanted to sort of draw out on the few of the ones that might have had additional questions to them. I do have the the code text. If you want to drill down a little further, I do have some additional information that I can share with you. But this time, I'd like to really just answer your questions. We did do an environmental determination on this one. In this case, each and every one of these proposed amendments we found does not have any impact. It was not a CEQA issue. And so we are doing a notice of exemption on that. The Planning Commission did review these in tremendous detail and did recommend these amendments as they are proposed to you tonight. As always, we do have the set of alternatives. I won't go through those in great detail. But at this point, I think I'd just like to open it up to questions, and Katie and I can help elaborate on those details. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil and Katie. Excellent job. And I think Councilwoman Moreno pointed out at a previous council meeting when some questions came up from the public about when do we get to stuff like this in detail, and this has really come out of previous strategic planning sessions, which we have at least once or twice a year, where we really work in depth on some areas where I know it's been a goal of the council to simplify, streamline for many years, and this is a continuation of that. And also staff has really brought to our attention where with Katie on the front line, seeing the questions that come up with folks that, you know, maybe things could be clearer, where these are recommendations from staff to us, how we can really make this a easier process for the public to get the job done. So thank you for your effort. We will have a few council questions. I'm going to have a few questions myself, some of which I don't need answers tonight. I would suggest that unless other council members have that some of the council questions may be ones that you want to answer briefly and then come back. Don't feel like if it's something that's complicated, we need to go into a lot of depth tonight, we can bring that one back. So with that, I'll go ahead and look to the lights first. We have Councilwoman Moreno, followed by Councilwoman Fonzie.
I know how tedious it is to go through all of this, and so the fact that you've found these, I know you'll find more next time. It's like when somebody writes a book, you go through hundreds and hundreds of edits and proofs, and there's still a typo on page 5, you know. So good job on going through and calling through this. Thank you for adding co-working in there. That was nice to see. Regarding the RMF 10 and 20, that 20 came from that minimum was because that was a state requirement, correct? And so normally you would call it RMF 24, but we call it 20 because the state has required a minimum of 20. Is that why we call it RMF 20?
Good as any.
I mean, I'm just thinking because it is inconsistent, and it always has been. And I think that's my understanding, but I just want to clarify that it's been a while since we've talked about it.
We actually did have a different density at one time. There was a maximum of 20.
We had a maximum of 16 at one time.
It's 16 at one time. It was probably put at 20 because that is the minimum in that particular zone.
Yeah.
But it constantly still creates confusion.
I can understand that. The one issue that I wanted to talk about is the laundromat, the coin, because when that got pulled out separately, it kind of had me start asking questions, which I talked with the city manager about and a little bit with Mr. Densmore. My concern is having that as a CUP in the downtown. It's hard to deny a CUP without reasons to deny a CUP, and so I think allowing that, we could be getting into a situation that we may not want to have. And possibly down the line when we do a deeper look into zoning, doing some changes, maybe it could be a CUP and some restrictions on it. But I just maybe a conversation we can have tonight on laundromats in the downtown.
Good question. Councilman Fonzie.
Thank you. Very good job. Katie, I could tell that you worked on this a lot. I saw your hand on some of the wording and knew it was you. A question regarding the top of page 100. The first bullet says stationery, dry goods, fabric stores, and sewing supplies and variety stores. It's spelled stationery with an A. I think maybe it should be with an E, meaning these are not in one place or not mobile, if you follow what I'm saying.
So if you ever wondered if folks read these staff reports, you'd know.
And then I wanted to go down to healthcare services and wondered if we could put that one up on the board here so everyone could look at that one. Is that possible, or maybe I should just read it?
Was Charles on the planning? And if it's something...
All right, we've got it, finally.
Okay.
A little bit of a glitch here.
We have a technical difficulty.
There it is.
Okay.
Very good. I read this through and got to thinking that there are several categories that might be a little fuzzy. And one, when you read this through about the fifth sentence or fifth line down, it's practiced by licensed individuals other than medical doctors or psychiatrists. And this was related to counseling, but there are other people that get licensing and call themselves therapists, like a massage therapist, which may or may not be licensed by the state. I believe they are. I don't know whether those are personal service or health care. It could be a physical therapist, which also has that respiratory therapist. There's a number of therapists that may or may not be health care, and wondered what the thought process was when this went through the Planning Commission.
So a lot of these things were because they aren't real true medical or healthcare services, and they're personal services or they're just general office uses. And they have a different parking demand, they have a different sort of licensing, and they may even be something that's good as a home occupation run out of somebody's home where they do visits. So some of those things did end up in that particular category. Does that help answer your question? Or?
Well, I know that we have in the Adobe Plaza a physical therapy there. Mm-hmm. It's not a retail, it's not really, it's more a quasi-personal service, but yet it's health-related because you go after you have surgery or injuries or other. So I'm not sure where something like that might fall, let's say, for example.
Physical therapy would fall under healthcare services. There's several other ways. There's so many different ones, it's difficult to define them all.
It may be helpful to review some of the health and safety state law that references licenses that are related to, if you know, for example, you have licensed marriage and family therapists, licensed clinical social workers. There's a range of folks that fall under that. What people would think of as like psychiatrists, psychologists, they are allowed to bill for services that fall under a medical diagnosis, similar in the physical health side with physical therapists. They would kind of rule out, for example, if there was a cosmetology or massage or things that may not have a medical diagnosis. So there might be a way to checking with like health agency how they word some of those things might get to what Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie is talking about.
Sure. And the idea here wasn't really to change this definition. We looked at it and said, gosh, how can we clarify this a little better? And also just reference that, hey, under offices, there are some other things that are just general offices and not really in this definition of healthcare services. So I don't know if...
Okay. It may be impossible to clarify. You know, I know this is kind of a tough one.
It's a tough one.
But it does bring the thought to, you know, I think it'll come up sometime when they come to the counter and you're going to have to deal with it. So it's something maybe you need to think about, and if it can be clarified, great. If not, we'll just have to deal with it. But I just wanted to set it out there. And another one, and I'm not sure where this should go, is when we talk about parking for a restaurant, let's say, more and more often you may be going from a drive-through, and those are becoming somewhat passé, and going to a drive-up, that you go to, let's say, Chili's, and they have a place to drive up, and they bring you your food that you ordered online or with your phone or however you did it. And I'm not sure if we're calling those parking. Are we calling those drive-through? Or how does the drive-up, you know, what category does this fall into? Is it parking, drive-through, or its own category that we need to work on at a later date?
Yes. Right now, a drive up to restaurant where you can actually maybe sometimes even text, or you can call ahead your food and you can walk in, or they can even walk to your car, is handled no differently than any other restaurant because it doesn't alter their circulation. It doesn't alter anything else. As long as they have that available parking space for that activity, as long as they aren't going to affect their circulation pattern of their site, it doesn't need any other special review. So it's something that is okay in a restaurant zone, fits with a restaurant use, whereas a drive-through does have significant changes to a site. It changes circulation patterns. You often have vehicles queuing. You have oftentimes different things going on with that. That's why we have that special review, whereas a drive-up restaurant wouldn't trigger those things. So I don't know that there's a need for a category for a drive-up, unless there's some unique thing that comes along where their entire service is drive-up, and then it becomes high volume, and it gets to something that we're not used to. Right now, we don't have anything that fits that definition. But, for example, there are restaurants that do have this drive-up service, but because there's no noticeable difference than the actual restaurant business itself, there's no need to look at that differently and to define that differently.
It would seem to me that you may need to have additional parking for drive-up because people are not going to be able to park there permanently to come in to dine. So it's not really a parking spot. And that's the way it came to mind. It's really a temporary parking spot, but it isn't a permanent or long-term. So if you're allowing parking in that area, that's one of the parking spots, it really isn't. If you followed that logic.
Yes, exactly. I think that they need to accommodate the parking for their restaurant if they have that service. An extra pull-in spot for that is something that we'd have to evaluate. But to call it something different, I'm not sure that we need to go to that point, but to evaluate it from a parking standpoint, I think is something we can do under their business plan as it stands today.
Okay, very good. And one last question. This would be on page 106 under retail sales restricted. Could we bring that one up?
We'll do our best to bring it up. It seems a bit touchy to bring those up.
Great. Stores and shops selling products that may have a blighting and or deteriorating effect upon the surrounding area. Obviously, this has value judgments attached to it. You say it may have a blighting and or deteriorating effect. I don't see, for instance, let's say a liquor store, and that would be a value judgment. Maybe in my book it's a blighting influence, or in Tom's book maybe it's not. Would a BevMo, which sells liquor but it has a slightly different feel to it than a liquor store, perhaps. Just wondering how we can have that value judgment, the blighting and deteriorating effect, that it, when it becomes subjective in a code, it causes problems. And I want to make sure that it's very strictly enforced and very clear to the public and clear to the person coming to the counter. And this bothers me a little bit when it says it has a blighting or deteriorating effect. Is there some way to rework this or make it not value-laden?
This language came directly from our personal services restricted section. It's the same exact language reformatted for the retail sales section. So we didn't change that from what we had in our code. This land use was already in that same exact description. We've just moved it over here to clarify it. So we start adding different uses to this, or if we start to change that wording, we might want to go back to the personal services restricted as well to change that wording on that side as well. So I think it's a good point. It's not something that I might be ready to do on the fly. We can take a look at that, I suppose.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Fonzie. I apologize. I was here historically when we did set up the personal services restricted category, and there are a lot of state, and there's a reason that that type of language is in there, so we can look at it again, but there's a very legal reason that we do have that type of language in there, and in order to give us the ability to differentiate the two types of uses. So it's just a caution. It's not as easy as one would think. We can't just strike the language. There's some reasons we have to have it in there.
So just similar out of language. Curiosity, this had to do with redevelopment, didn't it?
It did have to do with...
That's now gone. Where does that leave us?
It wasn't just redevelopment. It was our ability to be able to not concentrate different types of businesses together. We needed to have, why is that a problem? Why is it not a problem if beauty shops are concentrated, but that vape stores are? And so we needed to have some sort of description as to why we would like to have them more dispersed.
Okay. And maybe this is something that would have to go back to the Planning Commission to talk about liquor stores, for instance, or medical marijuana stores, or whatever that new business may be, but it may be something we need to look at.
And that would be it, is if you have a desire to change the zoning to put more things into this category, then that should go through the process and be a bigger discussion. This was just intended as administrative type of changes tonight.
Okay, I'm raising issues I shouldn't then. Thank you.
Well, along those lines, once you test drive, you too have a little button to draw attention here to the head spot. See if your button works. Go ahead and push my button. See if you can do it.
I don't know that I have one. Oh, there it is.
Attorney took it over.
Yeah. The city attorney was hogging the button again, I think. There you go. So I will be able to get your attention, or you can get my attention if need be. And I do think that was my point earlier. I've got a number of questions. We have a lot of questions to go through. Some of them may be bigger than we're going to deal with tonight, and let's kind of... please, we'd take your recommendations. That's maybe something we hold over for strategic planning and we go into a little more depth. We're going to get through this tonight. We're going to do a lot of cleanup and we're going to discover, we'll fix a few typos along the way, and we may have some bigger tasks to tackle at another run. So use your judgment and recommend to us that maybe that's that other category, but this is the time to bring such things up. We are going to go forward with other council questions. First, Councilman Moreno, followed by Councilmember Barbeau.
Just a quick follow-up for Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. I was thinking the pull-up wouldn't be dissimilar from Roundtable Pizza because they have pickup spots, and so I'm assuming that probably goes into their total parking, but they have signs saying for pickup only, so it just might be something to look at.
Councilmember Barbeau.
Ms. Fonzie's question almost got to my question, and this may be more policy and we need to push it off, but I was struck in this paragraph that we have up on the screen by the phrase, examples of these uses include but are not limited to the following, and it lists those things. And when you use a phrase like but not limited to, it sounds like we could add more.
But would that need to be done, as Ms. Fonzie kind of inquired, by the Planning Commission? Or, I mean, because if I want to come in and, you know, build the 32nd tattoo parlor next to, you know, in a block space, and we suddenly go, well, you know, that's just too many. I just want to understand how this would be applied, and maybe that's a policy question we can hold off till strategic planning, but that is what struck me about the paragraph, was the kind of open-endedness of it.
And the "but are not limited to" phrase really refers to something else that could pop up. For example, 10 years ago, we had no idea what vaping was, and it just suddenly appeared. The next thing could be, oh, I don't know. I don't want to throw any terms out, but so we leave that discretion in the code so that if something new does come up, we say, oh, this is really similar to this, so therefore we're going to put it in that classification. That's often how land use definitions work. You're often having to creatively, you don't have everything defined, and so you always have that phrase in there to catch those unusual things.
If we wanted to impose that on a type of use, we need to go through some process at the Planning Commission level or something to say, to add it, or?
If it's something that becomes a common thing, such
right.
as vaping, we tend to want to add it over time, certainly.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, for all of you staff that were betting on a shorter council meeting, sorry. But the good news is, one thing that I think is a real strength of our council is every member up here on council has spent time on the Planning Commission for some cases many years and have served as chairperson. And that's why you get so many detailed questions, because they've experienced some of these catch-22s that come up now and then and work with staff to try to think these things through, where sometimes you'd think, would that ever happen? Well, as a matter of fact, a few times. And we try to, part of why these things are brought to us at a meeting like this is, you know, if one isolated issue comes up once or twice, well, staff deal with it the best they can. But when you have a similar issue come up repeated times, that usually means we need to look at something from a policy standpoint and look at it in a new category or something to that effect. So there's a little bit of that discussion going on here tonight, and I have a few more of those that may well just need to be tabled for future discussion. But one that might be easier is, I was interested where you were talking about daycare centers in what's called a commercial neighborhood. Now, most daycare centers I've seen have been in residential areas. People have gone through a conditional use permit. I think there's an allowed use up to a certain size, beyond which requires a conditional use permit. I'm not feeling up to speed on what is a commercial neighborhood zoning, and could you talk a little bit about that category and also specifically daycare centers?
Yes.
Then do it.
Sorry, I was listening to a couple different conversations. The CN zone, as they call it, is a commercial neighborhood zone. It's one of our less intensive commercial zones. It's a zone that's designed to integrate smaller grocery stores, smaller neighborhood serving uses into a neighborhood. For example, there's a couple of them that I can think of along El Camino Real. They're sort of little niches, little areas where we have a neighborhood integrated shopping center.
Similar to out towards Paloma Park, there's that little drive-through grocery something like that.
Yes, that is commercial neighborhood zoning district there. Now, a daycare center, we already allow these daycare centers in other commercial districts. A child care center, a large family daycare, they're already allowed in some of these other commercial districts, such as the commercial professional zone or the retail zone. We've had requests for them in these neighborhood zones. There's not a whole lot of these neighborhood zones, but we began to look through the general plan and everything sort of seemed to point they should be allowed in that zone as well. Why wouldn't they be allowed there? That is a location that's integrated with housing. It's integrated with apartments and other sort of higher density areas. It seems to make sense.
You kind of answered my question there. That's a fairly tight definition, and there aren't a lot of those areas, commercial neighborhood, and that would to create a commercial neighborhood zone where it doesn't exist would require some effort going through planning commission, et cetera.
That would be a
general plan. So it's not like if you're in a neighborhood, you can say, I'm a commercial neighborhood.
It's a designated general plan or zoning district that's on our map today.
Yeah, that's good enough for me, and I kind of know where those spots are. Another question I think that's going to be coming up more is office parking. And some of our very small lots in the downtown area where more and more we may not have the ability to provide parking on site. And I don't know how strict our definitions are on that. It may be something that's going to be reviewed with this study coming up looking at parking in general. But is it specific in terms of parking spaces on site required for every commercial lot in the downtown area specifically, or is that a little less defined?
In our downtown, we don't require any parking for offices or for restaurants or for retail, any of those things, with the exception of residential uses or hotel uses. That only applies north of Atascadero Creek within the downtown zoning district. So the Colony Square project, actually, and all the way out to 41, that direction does require parking for offices. What this cleanup does is really make the office parking similar to the other parking for other land uses, where it's straight calculation, not this other language on there, which seemed to really actually require a lot more parking than we were seeing made sense. For example, where it said one per 400 square feet, but not less than two per office space, meant that if you had a thing that had two or three cubicles in it, the actual parking calculation could be really high when the actual parking demand is more along the lines of that one per 400. That's what this clarification strives to do. In the future, you are right, we will be looking at the downtown. We'll be looking at downtown land uses. We'll be looking at what should require parking, what should not. That's one of those things that is an incentive. It's a development standard. It's something we should definitely take a close look at.
And this is something that I think we'll be talking about this. Perhaps we kind of create that category for strategic planning. I'm sure parking is going to be an ongoing topic. I think specifically in the downtown area, now that we have a new hotel, I believe it's going to be called the Bridgewalk Hotel. So those who are wondering about a bridge to nowhere, well, it's going to an 85 upscale room hotel that's going to name itself after the bridge, along with some other development coming in. But when you look at residents in the downtown area, let's say folks want to do vacation rental second story, or just even apartment second floor, and if you're going to require parking spaces, that would be one thing. However, we often say that you may say you do not need to have parking if you are requiring folks to not have cars. For example, we have our regional transportation center right there next to Galaxy Theater, and if you're in a close concentric circles around that, it's conceivable you might have some residential second floor that has very easy access to commercial transportation, and so that maybe you'd look at parking different as we're looking at parking. As I know, we've kind of looked at that. If you're near a parking, near a rideshare lot or some other kind of a bus pickup spot, you might look at things differently. But we've got right in our downtown the regional transportation center. So do we kind of calculate parking any different for residential in that downtown area?
Our code doesn't have a provision for that. But what our code does have is anybody could apply for a planning commission use permit to ask for either a complete parking waiver or a reduction of their required number of parking spaces. And typically those sorts of things, the transit center, the project's location, get built into the findings to justify why they should have that parking exception or waiver. So in a roundabout way, yes, that could work. but it's not automatic, and it's not written into the code for that way that you mentioned. Those are some of the good things to look at, though, in the future, based on what types of land uses we'd like to incentivize, what types of land uses you'd like to make sure meet all of the code requirements specifically.
And with that, and again, I think it might be just a topic for strategic planning, just the whole area. We've talked about it before, but I don't know what the correct term is. I don't want to say just trailer park, like long term, but recreational vehicle parking that would require the payment of transient occupancy tax. You know, Elks has a small lot. There's potential, people have asked about other things similar, perhaps in tourist areas, maybe along Highway 41 or something. Do we have a category that would fit? How does that, and have we touched it in any of this?
We haven't touched it here tonight. There is a category for an RV park. It is a land use that is actually in our region in incredibly high demand. I think it's something that we should explore further. As I was coming back from Thanksgiving holiday, driving Highway 46 back from the Central Valley, must have been 300 giant RVs traveling that route. So the amount of RVs that come through here to Pismo and need places to stop over is enormous. There's a huge demand for that. All these lots fill up. Resorts like Flying Flags RV Resort are a great example in our region for a really nice tourist-serving use. But it is allowed in our zoning ordinance. We do have it defined. We can look at, you know, areas where those are just to make sure that they're all
right. I think
right
that would, and I just noticed that with the Paso Fairgrounds, there's a lot of times there's year-round equestrian events, and more folks have no place pulling in a trailer. They might drop horses off at even in some of our own locations, and there's no place to stay. And if there was accommodations, one advantage that Tascadero has is larger spaces in some areas, even around some of our hotels. So I would just suggest we'll see if there's council consensus down the road when we add to our strategic planning, but that category that I think is in higher demand might be an opportunity for our city to take a look at. So put that one on that list for future. I don't see any other council questions. We can go to the public list. There's some other council questions. So we'd welcome your input on this topic. And again, whatever you might have to say, if it's something about specifically related to this or something that might be considered in a future strategic planning, we will triage that. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, Susan Funk from Atascadero. And just a few minor items as I was going through this. One of them on page 95, in the definition of agricultural produce stands, certain kinds of produce are specified as an exception there, hay, grain, and feed sales. I'm wondering if it might be appropriate to put an exception for cannabis sales, or to otherwise in some place in these definitions make it clear that folks who are wishing to that we don't end up with pop-up roadside, buy here, grown here, cannabis stands, is an uncontrolled use of that in the community. Because if we're going to have retail sales of cannabis, I'm sure that we would all like to have that happen in a controlled fashion with the community having some input on it and the opportunity for the city to capture the tax revenue associated with it. Another item, on page 93, this might just be a typo or it might be a question of intent. The question is, on temporary events, that's defined as temporary events requiring more than 3 days for on-site setup and 3 days for teardown require the approval of a conditional use permit. That would suggest to me, reading that language literally, that an event that takes 2 months to set up but only 2 days to tear down would not require a permit. And as I was hearing about that earlier tonight, I'm not sure that that was the intent. So if the intent is that it's 3 days on either side, just changing the conjunction from and to or would amend that difficulty. And there's a typo on page 106. I'll just alert staff on that. Thank you.
And what is the typo? We might as well get it into the record now, because those are easy to fix.
Okay. So in the new paragraph on retail sales restricted that we were looking at earlier, the language, the latter language says examples include blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, change and, blah, 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 blah to something else, okay?
And pawn shops, to which the business of pawn brokering or the business of lending money upon personal property, pawns, or pledges is done. And I would propose that that should read in which, because it's not, this is not something you're doing to the business.
Well, wordsmithing we leave to the city attorney, but we'll check in on that. Any other things you've found?
That's all I have for now.
Thank you. We'll kind of review those when we close public comment. Any other members of the public wishing to comment on any item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council. We have three categories that I would tend to think those may be city attorney questions on wording. I would understand that cannabis, though there may be some cross-references that might be good, but I think it's going to have its own well-defined set of rules that will be very explicit. Mr. City Attorney.
Well, actually, the state just recently came out with their proposed regulations, so the answer is yes, there's going to be more on that, and so we'll just have to review those and see what impact they would have. We can certainly come back to you with any amendments to your current ordinances dealing with cannabis as it's appropriate.
Thank you. And with that, of course, as we all know on every topic, state law, federal law supersedes local law. So on the topic of cannabis, marijuana areas, since that's still in the works, we do have one advantage in that one of the key attorneys working at the state level on this is in the same law firm as our city attorney. So we kind of have a head start. The general theory is this is not a good one to be the first one to try to figure it all out, because there's going to be a lot of changes, lots of lawsuits, lots of additions, and it's going to be changing over time, and it'll have a separate category referencing, and I'm sure it'll be changing over time. But I'm pretty confident we're in a good position with the legal work being done on our behalf on that topic. The temporary events topic, Mr. Dunsmore, is that something you could take a look at, the wording, and you might review that with the city attorney if there's a need be?
Staff suggests the change of and to or, as was brought up in public comment.
So that's an easy one. And then the other issue, the typo, perhaps on page 106, is that a easy fix, or you need to check in with the city attorney on that one?
That language does seem appropriate to be that way. We simply, as I mentioned earlier, copied that from the personal services restricted section. It has the same wording. So if we change that, it'd be nice to change.
Well, I'm not suggesting that unless the city attorney recommends to you. If staff is satisfied and city attorney is satisfied, then I don't think
either
council
way
is concerned.
That would be two to in both those, either way.
But we have time yet for you to think about that with the city attorney before a motion is made, I'm sure. But it sounds like we have at least one amendment already. Okay, and I didn't see any other public approaching, so we have closed public comment. Back to council, and we could make any motion or discussion. Councilwoman Moreno.
I would like to discuss the idea of not allowing coin-op laundromats in the downtown for right now. We heard our community development director say that there has been interest in putting those in the downtown, and my concern is if we don't act now, I know that tonight we're not going to wordsmith and come up with restrictions, so my conservative point would be to disallow them in the downtown, and then we can look at that in the next round, that if we do want to allow those, what sort of conditions or restrictions would we have?
Well, I would agree with that. I don't know if there's other council consensus on that, or that can just be a let's just have that discussion now. How do other council members feel on that topic?
Oh, I agree with that. I myself do not think that's a good place for laundromats in our downtown, especially with all the growth that's going on and all the transitioning that's happening in the downtown area.
Well, you know, happy to hear from other council members, but seeing three council members concerned about that, I would suspect in a motion that could be modified then.
I certainly agree that I, you know, don't want to see that that particular type of business in the downtown area. It's absolutely not the direction we're trying to go. And
we do want a clean downtown, but
I agree, but I just wondered if the city attorney could weigh in. Are we making a policy decision about land use rather than wordsmithing and changing a code?
Well, I believe it would be a land use decision if you're talking about not allowing coin-operated laundries
in the downtown
area.
And they currently are.
Okay, can you hold on 1 second? The city manager wants to.
Okay. And of course, if
I could ask a question.
This is the first reading on this, so you are entitled to make modifications as you believe are appropriate. If we were at the second reading of this, then your ability to make such modifications is much more limited.
Very good. So we certainly could modify this at this time, and we'd still be on track for second reading because we are government. We do not do anything fast. We have plenty of opportunity for everyone in the community to weigh in and offer an opinion. If we change something tonight, it'll still be heard again at a second reading.
That's right.
So I think we are ready to move on. Is there other discussion items on other issues that...
Well, can I ask a question regarding that?
Go ahead.
For Mr. Dunsmore, in terms of the specific change here on page 68, where you're summarizing what we're being asked to do this evening, you say you're adding laundromat/coin-operated laundry as a separate land use definition. And on the slide that's up here, you're then listing the various areas where it is allowed. And is that based upon it currently being allowed as part of another definition?
Right now, they're included in the definition of personal services, and I believe those are allowed in many of the same districts, with the exception of, I think, they're not currently allowed in industrial park and industrial, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean,
that would be about it.
I guess you can
see. So there already is some shifting going on a little bit just to fit with the other zoning districts.
I would think, yeah, I mean, if we're splitting it out, then we would have the opportunity to not have it identical to the current personal services. Thank you.
Other council questions? I did have another question. I can't find the text that was talked about, but there was a list of definitions related to senior housing, and specifically one called a senior, it had the word hotel in it, which was used to describe a place where folks might be in a room that did not have kitchens, for example, and there would not be medical services, but there might be at least food services offered. My concern was using the word hotel in there has a connotation usually of short-term stays requiring transient occupancy tax. I'm just wondering about that choice of word. Is it used in that context in other areas?
In that location in the staff reports, page 106, where it references retirement hotel, it's not on the table for any of the proposed changes tonight. That's existing text.
Yeah, page 106.
Middle of the page there.
Yeah. Yeah, retirement hotel. So that's just kind of a definition of a term.
Yes.
Is that phrase used?
It is used by the state under a residential care facility for the elderly. They talk about these different things. That's where that term comes from.
Okay, as long as we didn't come up with it ourselves,
no.
I think that's... The state's going to do what the state's going to do. So we're happy to serve. Okay, I think everything else we'd just be wordsmithing. So I think if there's no other council suggestions, Councilwoman Fonzie, did you have another question or comment? I have a light on here.
I'm sorry. Let me turn it off.
I would entertain a motion that would have to require a couple of modifications. Councilman Moreno, you want to take a shot at that?
Sure. I will move staff recommendation, including the typographical errors that were mentioned, as well as removing laundromat, coin-operated laundry as an allowable use, or a CUP in the downtown, but just making it not allowable. Does that capture everything? Okay.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Councilmember Barbeau. Roll call, please. Did you have another comment?
No.
He seconded it, not me.
Oh. Well, let's give...
sound like Charles.
You do. Well, my mistake, Councilman Moreno, seconded by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Burpo?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Now we can get to an item we have been really excited and watching for years, the management report dealing with housing and community development, parks-related grant, and associated parks projects funding. And as much as I'm excited about this item, I have to step down because one of our rules is we cannot participate in an item that we potentially could have a conflict of interest. And by law, some things are defined very well. I happen to own property within 500 feet of our community center where these funds will be spent. So you'll see me participate in some discussions and not in others. When it comes to doing things on the property within close proximity to something I own, I have to step down. I can participate as a member of the audience, but not as a council member. So at times like this, we turn over to Councilwoman Fonzie, who's presided over everything related to the community center for some time. So I'll turn it over to you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I would advise the members of the council, please raise your hand since I can't see the buttons if you have questions. We'll let you take your seat and then have our staff report.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie and council members. The item you have tonight is actually a couple of different items that are related, and so we're going to take them as one item. One are some changes to our HCD parks-related grant, and the other is related to funding regarding the Joy Playground. To talk a little bit about the HCD grant, it was a California Department of Housing and Community Development grant, and it was an incentives-based grant. The grant was expected to be non-competitive and was really just tied to affordable housing activity. So the more affordable housing units built within a community, the more grant funds that community was eligible for. Since we were a leader in meeting regional affordable housing needs, and we've had substantial compliance with our regional housing needs, we were eligible for quite a bit of grant funds. In February of this year, you guys authorized the grant application submittal. We applied for $742,750, which was the maximum that we felt that we were allowed to apply for. Council had earmarked $505,000 of that for the Joy Playground at the Colony Park Community Center and $237,750 for rehabilitation and parks project. As you can imagine, this was a very popular grant program. This was the last year of this grant program, and so they were unable to provide funding to all of the cities and applicants that applied. As a result, they apportioned the amount of funds that they had available between all of the applicants. And after that apportionment, we were awarded $355,706. That number has changed quite a bit. Once we got the notice of the award, we were notified in October that the previous resolution that we had adopted required a little bit more additional language authorizing the city manager to execute the application package and the related grant documents. So they did ask us to go back and bring a modified resolution back to council. So we will be asking you to amend and restate the previously adopted resolution and amend it to allow the city manager to execute the grant contract. In addition, we are recommending some revised project funding because we did not get the full amount. What we are recommending, the Parents for Joy Playground has been a huge priority of this council and the community for such a long time. It is eligible for park impact fees. I think they're formerly called Parkland Facilities fees. We have, because of some of the building activity that has gone on, we do have some Parkland Facilities fees that we can allocate to the Joy Playground. Staff is recommending that we allocate the full $505,000 of those funds to the Joy Playground and use none of the grant funds for that. So basically we're saying, hey, let's use those park impact fees instead of grant funds for the Joy Playground. The Joy Playground is eligible. It is in a project that we can use those fees on. The other projects that we had proposed as part of this grant are not eligible for park impact. So this would remove a bunch of the strings that we would have attached. It makes it easier to get that project done, moving. We really are working towards making sure that we break ground by May 1st and get that project, that playground, complete as soon as possible. We've all seen the Joy Playground many times. It's going to be a wonderful facility. Between the different swings that they have, the fencing to prevent the lopers, the metal sides for the kids with cochlear implants, all of the accessibility things that we have. It's an amazing park project, and so it would be exciting to be able to get this project off the ground. As far as the $355,000 since February, it has become apparent that we need to make some significant changes to our playground equipment at the lake park. As playground equipment ages, it stops meeting some of the standards and the requirements, and it becomes impossible to find replacement parks. Some of our equipment out there at the lake park has reached its final age, I guess, and needs to be replaced. So what we're recommending is all of the grant funds be put towards the lake park, with a large chunk of that going towards the playground replacement and upgrades. And that project will bring before the Parks and Rec Commission on what that playground upgrades, what staff is proposing for that, including upgrading some of the surfaces, getting rid of some of the sand, and replacing all that equipment together. We're proposing some electrical grades, some outdoor picnic and barbecue area replacements, other site improvements and amenities, including drinking fountain replacement, and we will have to be charging some grant administration and project management. So this has a little bit more detail about what we are planning for the playground replacement and upgrades. As we said, poured in place rubberized surface. We would be leaving the tot lot area the way it is, but we would be replacing the larger playground structure that's intended for ages kids 5 to 12. If we get the playground ordered by January of 2018, we would get a $50,000 credit towards that. So we are trying to fast track this in order to take advantage of that. This again talks a little bit about some of the upgrades and some of the other site improvements that we're talking about. For the grant schedule, we were notified of the grant award. We will be submitting the revised resolution to them here in November and December. We hope to begin some of the projects as early as January, and we do need to have completed all of the projects by June of 2019. We will be working on even a faster track with the Parents for Joy on the Joy Playground and trying to get that playground complete even sooner if possible. With that, the fiscal impact would be the appropriation of $505,000 in Park Facilities Fees Fund. We would be accepting the grant for $355,706 and expending that amount. And there will be some staff costs that are not covered by the grant, but those are minor in relationship to the grant amounts. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rochelle. I was wondering if you could explain for the audience that may not know what the Joy Playground is, why this is different, and how it will be implemented.
I think most of the audience could probably tell me a little bit about the Joy Playground. This is an inclusive playground for children of all abilities and disabilities, I guess, too. It is a playground that is intended to be inclusive so that parents with disabilities are able to play with children at the playground, that children of all abilities are able to play together. So this is designed, this is different than playgrounds that are ADA accessible, where it's a playground designed for kids without limitations. This is a playground designed for kids with limitations and without limitations to all be together. And so it is truly designed for everyone rather than the majority of the population with some extra added afterthoughts for others. So I know that they can put it much more eloquently than I, and I'm sure they're going to want to talk during the public comment section. Thank you.
Thank you. And will that $505,000 that's proposed fund the whole project, or will there be other monies needed?
They have raised over $100,000. If you add that with the 505 and some credits that we would be getting from Game Time, there's a $100,000 grant. We can complete substantially most of the playground. There is some continued fundraising that is taking place. They would love to raise, I believe, another $100,000 to $150,000 to complete everything that they want. They are well on their way to doing so, but would love for people to continue to donate so that we can get everything that we dreamed of in the playground.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for staff? Ms. Moreno?
I'm curious about the electrical. Is that sort of everything we need to do that we know of in terms of the things that have been requested from vendors when we're having events?
That should cover that with that cost. We're going to still identify the work scope in these projects and refine that. That's why we had estimated cost in there, so that'll change a little bit. But, the need we've heard from vendors during Wine Festival, the Mid-State Cruiser car show out there, and then just like the bounce houses and everything as well, is that they've asked for additional electrical outlets out there. So that's the primary need out there. Okay. There might be some additional, panel upgrades and other things that might have to occur to support that.
And will that be included in this, or that would happen later?
That would be included in this.
Wow, this is less than I expected it to be when we've talked about electrical before, so I'm pleased. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, Sarah, and you and Janelle and several parents came here, a little over 4 years ago, and talked to us and said, hey, we've got this need and this great idea, and here you are today, all the work that you and many others have put into it. Just congratulations.
Other questions? Well, I have one. I brought up to the city manager yesterday or the day before that there wasn't water fountains or drinking fountains included in the plan, and she put them in tonight. But I had talked to several people who know more about drinking fountains than I. They say that they're vectors for all kinds of diseases because kids put their mouths on them and people bathe in them that are homeless. They have people put their dog up there and give them a bath. I thought I should at least bring this up and think maybe the water bottle filling that comes from the top down rather than from the bottom up might be a better solution to providing water to those who don't have it.
Sure. We looked at some, the maintenance supervisor and I looked at some different fountains today, and they have some for approximately $3,000 that we can purchase, and then we install and build a slab around it or whatever, that have like a dog portion towards the bottom. I think we've all seen these before that they can drink from, and then something above on top too. But I share the same concern. That's why I'm reluctant to drink from public drinking fountains, but that's just me.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you right, there's a way to accommodate this in a more healthful manner.
I believe so, and we'll come back to the city council with some of these recommendations before this even goes to construction or anything.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Mr. Burbeau.
So in relation, I think you just answered my question, but you would come back to the council before, prior to a contract award, obviously.
We would.
Yeah,
we'd like to, you know, get council buy-in. Obviously, you know, if we do these as separate projects, some of them don't meet that threshold for council approval. But, you know, we bring these back just to keep the council informed of what's being recommended, give you a little more detail on what that is. Because, I mean, that's one of our premier parks, and I think this playground... the playground is a real focus out there. Every time I go there, there's always parents and families, and to upgrade that and then have the whole surfacing of that entire boundary, this rubberized port-in-place surfacing would be great, and it would be very durable and long-lasting and fully ADA accessible.
Very good. All right, thank you. I'd like to open it up to the public. Is there anybody who'd like to speak on this item?
Jeff Oslin, resident of Atascadero and also a business owner and on the Parents for Joy committee. That is definitely trying to get this park built, and we will break ground May 1, one way or another. I think it's a great way to kill two birds with one stone and use funds properly to fix up the Atascadero Lake Park and then also get the Joy Park off the ground. And that will allow us to shift our fundraising effort to help complete the Joy Park rather than help fund the Joy Park. And that terminology is huge. We have some donors that have donated in the past to get us off, to get us started, and they have suggested that once we break ground that they will probably donate again, and it will be a lot easier to fundraise the shortfall that we foresee, and we might actually be able to complete it in one swoop rather than be one or two pieces of equipment short at the end. So that's kind of the focus that we're pushing. We have had one contractor informational meeting. We plan on having a second one. We're pretty close to having a general and making major headway to complete the park. To add to our city manager's comment, this also really does help adults as well and anybody who's able-bodied or not able-bodied. Anybody can play in this playground. You know, if you're a veteran or you're in a wheelchair as a parent or some other type of disability, it gives you the ability to actually be with your kids or your kids to be with your grandparents or parents as it will be fenced in as well. And that's a big, big thing. It's a very good fit for the city of Atascadero. It's an incredible fit for North County. We don't have anything really around here. We have a piece of apparatus sporadically at playgrounds around, but this really gives a great opportunity for everybody to be able to utilize a very nice playground. So on that, any questions?
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Well, looks like we do have a question.
Well, it's not a question, but could you let people know how they can donate now, or if they want to, you know, donate some funds towards this project?
Sarah, help.
We have lots of ways, but I'll let Sarah jump in with every website under the sun.
Hi, I'm Sarah with Parents for Joy. If anybody wants to donate, they can go to our website, which is parentsforjoy.org, and there's donate buttons all over the website. They can send in a check, which is also listed on the website of how to write out a check and send it in the mail. We have a GoFundMe page. If you just look up Parents for Joy, it should pop up. Stop me on the street and give me some money. However, I mean, there's lots of ways to donate. Most of it's written very detailed on the website, so parentsforjoy.org.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak?
Hi, Susan Funk from Atascadero. First of all, I just, on this Giving Tuesday, I want to join in the celebration of the incredible work that the folks here have done with Parents for Joy in making this asset for our community to be inclusive of all of the children and adults in this community. And I think it's a wonderful thing for Atascadero. We've also heard in that discussion the importance of internet access as a way to support things and get funds. It's a wonderful tool for folks of all abilities to connect. And in that spirit, I wanted to encourage, as we're doing electrical upgrades at the Lake Park and electrical upgrades associated with the Parents for Joy facility, that we be attentive to ensuring internet access, a good Wi-Fi support in our areas to the extent that we can affordably make that possible. It's an excellent service to our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one approach the podium, I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the council for a motion or discussion.
If there is no discussion, I will move approval of the four recommendations.
Second.
Motion by Ms. Moreno, second by Mr. Sturdivant. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, you may return.
Well, one parallel item I did want to recognize Kiwanis. One of our early Kiwanis Mayor's Winemaker Dinners, we raised $30,000 early. I think it might have been our first one. It was certainly a number of years ago, and Kiwanis has made a big commitment to this. As you know, Mark Derez, who's one of our planning commissioners, an architect in a wheelchair, has been very instrumental in helping design this. And I know Kiwanis is considering an additional substantial donation that I think will be easier to make with your commitment. And I know Kiwanis is, we happen to have the president of Rotary sitting to my left. And I know Kiwanis is going to be reaching out to other organizations, challenging them. I mean, if Kiwanis is, you know, a bunch of poor old guys can come up with $50,000. What could Rotary come up with? I mean, sky's the limit, right? So I'm sure we'll be following up on that. As members of the community, that's something I know the community is behind your efforts. So again, thank you, Parents for Joy. Moving on, there's not a lot left to do. That takes us to council announcements and reports. And we'll just merge the two announcements, reports, and committee reports together again. I'll just go from my right to my left. Of anything you would like to say on any of these, we will do.
No report.
I'd like to report that DRC is meeting a design review committee and will be discussing a proposed development of a retail store. I believe it's proposed to be a liquor store with apartments above it on Morrow Road, somewhat near the intersection of Kerberill heading towards the lake. 2 o'clock if anybody's interested in going. Thank you.
Go ahead. I'll...
Just regarding the co-working kind of business startup that I talked about, we had a survey go out, and surveys are being looked at, but a lot of interest, so I'll keep you posted, but it's moving forward.
Ms. Mayor, I have no committee reports, but I did have a question whenever the time
sure.
is appropriate.
Go ahead.
Well, in light of the question asked by Ms. Funk regarding internet access, at some point I'd like to hear from the staff about either the viability and the desirability of, you know, having that kind of access in our parks. You know, it may not be something that's real feasible, but it just struck me as a reasonable question to ask.
That's a good point, and with today's technology, that would not be as hard as one would think.
And I'm sure it would be greatly appreciated by parents sitting in the park watching their kids.
Well, on the flip side, if we're going to go down that road, I'd like to say I think it's a good place to unplug. So I think there's a time and place for the internet, but when you're outside and you're supposed to be enjoying nature and playing on the equipment, perhaps the internet is not a good competition.
Point well taken.
So with that, we won't even try for a tiebreaker. We'll, it's probably a good topic to add to our strategic planning list. We have at least 2 topics so far. That would be good. And I have a few things to go over. No thing to report on the City Schools Committee, the County Mayor's Roundtable, which we meet monthly and sometimes more often. Mayors appear to get along much better than the County Board of Supervisors, all 7 of us. And we've been working on a number of regional issues. As you well are aware of, the 2 North County mayors had concerns about the animal shelter issue, and with support of our councils, had requested additional time for review. The board did not agree to that, and so both councils did withdraw from, and it's not really withdrawing from an agreement, because part of the process was this was the timeline that you had to make a decision. If you're going to continue forward at the point we had to make a decision, we would incur substantial cost to the community. We opted out at that point, said we really need to look at some alternatives. We did, as you know. And then following up to that, the 2 mayors went back to the Board of Supervisors, and at that point, we did get a more positive feedback. The board did choose to meet with us, and we formed an additional ad hoc committees. We have ours made up of myself and Council Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, and in PASA we had Mayor Martin and Mayor Pro Tem up there as well, and our 2 city managers met with the County Board of Supervisors from North County, and the new
County Administrator.
Thank you. I'm so used to saying city manager, and it was just 15 years ago. I worked for the county for 30 years. How quickly you forget these things. But it was nice because actually the County Administrative Officer has never met with us in the North County before. So this was an important precedent. And coming out of that, we did show that there were alternatives, viable alternative for the North County, made that clear. We also learned that many county staff had many of the same recommendations that we had come up with, looking at some private sector options, and it simply just didn't percolate up even to the board through staffing. And I was actually pretty pleased. We have Councilman Fonzi weigh in if she'd like, but I think we were really heard, and the board will be looking at alternatives. Now, one thing that made me feel like there's really going to be some significant changes is the health agency director has retired. Coming up, and over the health agency has dealt with two issues. One, the animal shelter, and then there's a mental health issue I'm going to talk about in a momentarily. But I think he basically publicly said that he agrees with the board that some of these issues need kind of a fresh start, a fresh look. So I think we're going to make some headway on being heard on some of the issues we've raised, and our goal really was to reduce costs countywide as well as provide services. So I'll attend a board meeting coming up here shortly, and we'll see what the board does with our one meeting. It's too early to see a significant response, but I think they will seek more time and are very much going to work with us. We did deliver to the CAO the list of concerns we all had, which is the same concerns Paso had, and I believe they're taking them very seriously, and we'll, I think we're in a position now, at least we're not under this time crunch, because we've kind of turned the table, so to speak. It's now up to them to kind of see what they can do, and I think now all of the mayors who were kind of looking at us a little funny for a while, like, oh my goodness, if we're opt out, it's very expensive for everyone else, because they wouldn't have as low a cost option as us as doing it on our own. But now I think everyone sees there's potential for everyone to have a better program at a lower cost. So that's our goal, and we'll hear back. That segues over to a parallel topic. Excuse me. I've put it on the agenda this coming Friday at our countywide mayor's meeting, the topic of mental health services countywide, but specifically for criminal justice. And this is an issue I've brought up at the county mayor's meeting several times. I've very much aligned with our chief. Every mayor has recognized that we are having costs shifted on to us at a local level. Really, it's unprecedented. We noticed it before years ago when essentially health services kind of got shifted to the fire department because our paramedics more and more became the community's doctor and have had a lot of medical calls that take substantial amount of time. Well, parallel to that, and more recently, it has certainly gotten exacerbated, but the police officers are more and more responding to mental health calls and are tied up for maybe anywhere from 2 to 6 or 7 hours in the field with maybe a mental health a person with a mental health needs, and there's simply no place to take them to. There's some problems with the psychiatric health facility that the county runs. There've been problems at the jail that really is not the place for folks that have this 5150 designation, where it's basically a person that's a danger to themselves or others. It's a mental health diagnosis. It needs to be evaluated by medical professionals. The resources have not been there. Won't go into details on that, but it's going to be discussed at the upcoming County Board of Supervisors meeting, as the sheriff is making a proposal to simply have an additional psychiatric health facility or services really expanded at the sheriff's department. Without going into a lot of detail, as many of you know, having been retired as the administrator from county mental health, I've been out for a good 15 years or so. We actually had more mental health services 10, 15 years ago. They've reduced over time. We used to have a robust mobile crisis team that met with law enforcement in the field. That's not as accessible. We used to have a full psychiatric health facility where law enforcement could simply drop clients off, immediately have them taken over, get the triage that was needed. That's not available anymore. So I think the sheriff has really, I think, done a good job of taking the lead in this area, and I think with some changes in the health agency, it's certainly going to impact not only the animal shelter issue, I think it will also affect the mental health issue. So I've met with the sheriff. I certainly make sure I am always aligned with the chief, but I think all the police chiefs are way ahead on this issue, having brought it up at the countywide mayor's meeting. Most of the mayors have checked with their chiefs and realized this is something that affects all of us. I'm going to ask all of the mayors to join with me and Mayor Martin in requesting the board to support the sheriff's proposals. He's had a pretty well-qualified committee working on this with experts from really all over the state, taking a look at what we could do in our county to make the system better, and certainly would be cost-effective over time. So I'm kind of going out here again, similar to what we did with the animal shelter, but this is an issue that really affects every city as well as our whole county. And so, I'm just letting you know I'm kind of taking the lead on this with the county mayors on a broader topic, but I'm assuring you I'll check in with the chief, but I think all the chiefs and the mayors are very much aligned on this issue and our city managers. So, Chief, would you want to add anything to what I'm saying? And then I will move on.
I think he spoke very well. The problem has existed for a long time. We've asked for solutions, and while there were some initial forays into getting groups together, county hospitals and private industries together with county health services, it just doesn't seem like we're getting anywhere, and so I do appreciate the input from yourself and appreciate the sheriff taking the lead on it and pushing forward. I think we'll see some real action, hopefully, now.
Thank you, Chief. So I'll hopefully have good things to report back, Robert and I both, on I think the health agency is going to be changing. So I think that there's nothing else on my other items that are need to be talked about at this point. So if there are no other council items, staff have any? So go ahead and raise your hand, staff person. Who guessed right on when we'd be? I would think the city clerk would pretty much have us figured out.
She was 2 minutes off.
Okay. Well, with that, then we are adjourned. Thank you. And we are going to a closed session, and Mr. City Attorney, could you describe that and then also let folks know that you will be reporting back at the conclusion, though I don't know if there's any expected actionable items.
Yeah, we do not expect any announcements coming out of the closed session. The closed session is for the successor agency. Retake. The closed session is for the council. It is a conference with legal counsel regarding existing litigation. It's authorized under Government Code Section 54956.9D1. It is the application filed by PG&E for retirement of the Diablo Canyon power plant. And Councilmember Sturtevant will not be participating in this because?
I work at Diablo Canyon, so. So you guys have a nice conversation. I'll head on home.
Excellent. With that, we'll adjourn our regular session. Thank you.